You want some bad news, Michael?
No.
What are you asking me?
You're the guru of the gray matter. I figured if anybody had it, you'd have the answer.
I can't give you any direction.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
You're completely wrong.
I refuse to be wrong on two calls in a row.
Tell me I'm spot on or tell me I'm crazy as I'll get out.
I have no idea.
I have a six-month-old, so we'll be raising him according to Dr. Ray.
Talk about being a winner.
So, you want my question?
You ain't making any sense.
You're absolutely right. I just needed confirmation.
So what are you going to do about it, Dawn?
I'm calling you.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Guru of the gray matter. I like Wizard of the White Matter myself. That's the myelin sheath. Covers axons. Thanks for joining me here. Does the white matter turn gray? Oh, good one. Never thought of that. Andrew, my producer man, says, does the white matter turn gray over time? Well, it does do some things over time, just like everything else in our body does over time. You can push it back a little bit. Our pastor used to say, you don't save life with modern medicine, you prolong death. Well, that's true. All right. Enough of this persiflage. A couple of things. I'm going to make excuses before the program here. Hate to do this, but, they taught us when I took some counseling courses in grad school. My minor was counseling. My major was PhD in clinical psychology, but my minor was counseling. My boy had some flaky courses in counseling. Oh, my gosh. I'll have to share that with you sometime. Just to know what you're paying for if your kids go into counseling in a graduate school setting. But anyway, leaving that aside, I will probably not have the best show. there's a couple of reasons for this. One, I'm tired. Last night, I had thought, I'm settling down about 7 o'clock, 7:30, going to take it easy. I've got at least another full hour before I have to go to bed at 8:30. And wouldn't you know it, took a shower. And I had a good hair night, and I didn't want to waste it, so I went out. Yeah, it didn't matter where I went. Went to the drugstore, walked around outside. You can't wait. You can't waste good hair. Ooh, but I stayed out. I stayed out all the way to the edge, 8:45, something like that. Oh yeah, limped on home. So that was a big factor there with a good hair night, and I had to go out. But I think I'm recovering now. I don't have a good hair now because these headsets. You can have great hair in the morning, but with these headsets, it jams it all down, and there's a big divot in your head. It's a problem. I hope it doesn't become permanent. I've been talking to my attorney about this. He said I could have a case against Ave or EWTN if my hair sticks like this. Just like my mom used to say, don't put your eyes like that, they'll stick. Don't eat the watermelon seeds, you'll grow a watermelon in your belly. All the fears I had when I was a child. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get on to the program. Program is The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, co-production, EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network, and Ave Maria Radio Communications, my compadres there in Ann Arbor, Andrew Kruchek, producer man, and Eric Dumont, who is the first voice you will hear when you call in at 877-57-EQUAL. Multiple reasons for calls. One is to keep me company, which I think is the best reason. That's very nice of you. A little bit of a chit-chat we have. And in between all the chit-chat, maybe we can give you a little guidance about something in your life. Other reasons people call in is they have a generic question, something they don't understand about psychology or about development or about intellect or about emotions or anything in the human condition. Sometimes they call in to help other people, which is very nice. They say, I had this experience, this is what I did, or a little tip, Dr. Ray. And there's always the subtle implication, Dr. Ray, you missed it. You didn't add this. Now, I've got one other problem here before I go into my opening monologue. I am, of course, been well past the age where I need reading glasses. And I need reading glasses to see, for example, clearly. I can still kind of see it, sort of, kind of. And I apparently misplaced them today. They were not in my little case there that I bring into the studio here. Must have left them at home. So I probably am going to get your name wrong, your place wrong, and probably mix up the reason why you called in. You may be calling in about an elderly parent in a nursing home, and I'm thinking you're calling in about potty training. So who knows? Who knows exactly what you'll get here? I'm looking at Emily's call up there right now, and I think that's Emily. It's either Emily or Morgan. It's either Emily from Morgan, Illinois, or Morgan from Emily, Illinois. I don't know. I'll squint. But I'll get to that. Never in human history has raising children been taken over by experts like it has in the last 40, 50, 60 years. And the experts convey to parents that there are certain psychologically correct ways to raise children. And you parents, not being professionals, how do you know if you're doing the right thing? I mean, I get that all the time from parents. Am I doing the right thing? Am I talking the right way? Am I saying the right things? The experts have all kinds of ideas and notions, almost as many as there are experts. And they have phrases to summarize their notions. And one, and there's a lot of them, but I'll just pick one for this monologue. Pick your battles. That's what the experts say. Pick your battles. In other words, there are certain things as a parent that you, I assume they mean stand firm on, because you don't want to battle. If you have to battle, you're not standing firm. I assume there are certain things that they think a parent should stand firm on, although they might think you should stand weak on things that you think you should stand firm on, because many experts are not religious. So therefore, they don't have your worldview. They say, in picking your battles, that as a parent, let some things go, and then intervene and teach, or maybe even, as a last resort, discipline. I have a real problem with pick your battles. You can interpret it two ways. The first way, I pretty much agree with. Pick your battles. If the child is being a kid, he's not doing anything wrong. He's watching TV and he's standing on his head. And you may think to yourself, what are you doing? Why are you standing on your head? But he's just being a kid. He's not hurting anything. He's standing on his head. My son used to go to the crib when he was about two, and he would just kind of stand on his head in the crib until he fell over and fell asleep. Okay. Or you send him to bed and he's in bed, but he's just kind of singing to himself. Is he doing anything wrong? He's not getting out of bed. Not saying I have to go to the potty 26 times. He's just kind of in bed singing. Is that a battle? I think a nice way to separate it out is kid junk, stuff of the kidhood, which isn't irresponsible or immoral or hurtful to anybody else. Let it go. A lot of times, we're tempted as parents to pick on something, comment, nag about something that's not wrong. There's nothing bad about it. It's just we just don't like it. It irritates us, you know. He's outside running in circles. Hey, settle down. Settle down. Why? He's just running. But here's where I think the experts trip up parents. I'll use a teenage example. Teens are notorious for rolling their eyes at parents. And that's just viewed as standard teenhood, you know. That's what they do. They'll grow out of it. They'll grow out of it. That kind of demeaning disdain is, well, that's a standard adolescence. Let it go. Pick your battles. He's not throwing a brick at you. He's not cussing at you. He's not screaming at you. He's not being loudly disrespectful. No. He's just rolling his eyes. Come on. Pick your battles. That's where I really have a hard time with experts. Basically, they say, if it gets really serious in your eyes, then you do something about it. But, you know, the little stuff of disrespect, or the little stuff of mistreating a sibling, or the little stuff of not cleaning their room, you know, pick your battles, let the room go, it's not a big deal. Who are you to ask that they keep their room clean? I think that dramatically undercuts parent decision-making authority. We didn't allow rolling eyes in our house at all. That's disdainful. That's nasty. That's nonverbal disrespect. That's basically a slap on the right cheek, you know. When our Lord said turn the other cheek, he wasn't talking about parents saying, well, okay, you can be disrespectful to me, kid, I'll just turn the other cheek. No, our role is to teach, so those little things. I'll draw a parallel. There was something called the broken window policing, or broken window theory of law enforcement. This was tried, I believe, in New York City. For a while, what they found was, let's just tackle the big stuff. Let's just go after the rule-breaking offenses that are larger. The smaller stuff, you know, couches on the curb that are set on fire, or broken windows in abandoned buildings. Let it go. Let it go. Pick your battles. Let it go. And what they found was that translated into more rule-breaking of all kinds. And when they took a zero tolerance toward the small stuff, you're going to get in trouble for setting a couch on fire. You're going to get in trouble for breaking a window. They found that the big stuff declined. Why? The theory was it conveyed an impression. Someone is in charge. When all this little stuff, this picayune stuff, supposedly, relatively speaking, but it's still lawbreaking, still vandalism, was allowed to let go, it created an overall impression. There's deterioration, nobody's really in charge. I draw a parallel to parenthood. Creates an overall impression. The kid can roll his eyes at you. When you let it go, is he going to stop there? I rolled my eyes at you, but the next thing out of my mouth is going to be snotty. Pick your battles is not good advice if you're trying to teach virtue. It's good advice if you're letting a kid be a kid. Childhood stuff. It's not hurting anyone. It's not irresponsible. It's not immoral. It's just kid junk. There's a lot of that. Pick your battles. Well, let me put it to you this way. That's a phrase that I'm going to pick my battle about. 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number to call to get onto the program. Get to your calls. Love to speak to you. Thank you for joining me.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
How would you like to celebrate the Divine Mercy at the Shrine of the Divine Mercy in Poland on Divine Mercy Sunday? Well, you can. Steve Ray here, inviting you to join us in Poland as we follow the footprints of John Paul II, Maria Faustina, and Maximilian Kolbe. Daily Mass at the most iconic, beautiful churches and delicious local foods. Join us in April for Divine Mercy Sunday in Poland.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Do you wish you could have discussions about difficult topics with your adult children? If so, don't worry. You're not alone. Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak, and our book, Having Meaningful, Sometimes Difficult Conversations with Your Adult Sons and Daughters, can help you draw closer to your adult children and help guide them on the path to more faithful and meaningful lives.
You can get our latest book and all of our other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Very nice to have you with me here on The Doctor's Inn. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Let's go to Emily. I'm going to make sure I'm reading this right, because without my reading glasses, I don't even know if I'm looking at the computer monitor. Hi, Emily. How are you?
Good afternoon, Dr. Ray. I'm wonderful on this feast of St. Joseph.
Well, good. Wonderful. Now, I'm looking at the way Andrew summarized your question. It looks like something's bothering you. It's like a fixation, you know, an obsession. You called it a mind virus. What do you mean?
I did. Okay, so I'll give you a little bit of context. In the town that I live in, we're having our local school board elections, and there is a pediatrician who is very okay with allowing children to believe that God messed up when they made them, which I, as a Catholic, do not agree with that. And that's the mind virus that I was kind of referring to, is that the idea, your mansplain, your rant that you had, your little...
Hey, show some respect here. Rant? I like to call it intellectual puissance.
Okay, rant. All right. Well, maybe a rant was the wrong word. But you had mentioned in your monologue, that's what you call it. In your monologue, you mentioned that the medical professionals and professionals in general think that they know how to raise children better than their parents.
Yes.
And this particular person, is she herself, as a pediatrician, prescribes hormones to children. Strike number one, in my opinion.
Mm.
The issue that I'm having is that in my little time capsule town, it seems to be that no one else really finds an issue with this mentality. Now, my child is homeschooled, so I really do not have a horse in this race. But it deeply bothers me that we're at a point in the culture that the majority are okay leading children down the path of a degenerate lifestyle and possibly condemning children to hell before they even get a chance to live their own lives. So I guess my question to you is, how do I make peace with other people allowing harm to come to other children that aren't mine? I think it might just be the mom in me. I'm not sure what it is that deeply bothers me about this, but it's. I find myself advocating for children that aren't mine, arguing with people in town, defending just general biology and common sense. And as much as I want to not do it, I feel as though someone is supposed to.
Well, let me give you a little hope.
Okay.
More research is coming out. Studies are coming out. Just saw one yesterday. Talked about a number of children who have gone down the gender confusion path, and their percentage of depression and heavy suicidal ideation has leaped upward. Absolutely.
Yes,
and there are more and more people saying, I want to detrans, and what did you people do to me? I was confused,
sir.
And you simply pushed me in that direction. And
yes,
your pediatrician, board member or running for board member, is echoing right now the American Medical Association's view on this. People look, wow, American Medical Association, they can't be wrong. Well,
they
you're right.
They absolutely can be.
This goes against biology. And the bottom line is the trillions of cells in our bodies are either XX and XY. And if there is confusion, it is in the mind. The mind says, I don't feel like I belong in this body. I don't relate to being in this body, etc. A lot of factors are coming up now. Of course, the high percentage of kids diagnosed autistic who have gender confusion. The heavy amount of social media use, especially among young girls, and the gender confusion among young girls is off the charts. So it used to be boys, now it's young girls. So all of these are social effects that we need to explore. And right now, the people in your community, I think, and you can see the survey starting to show this, don't agree with that, but they're scared shut up. That's where a lot of them are.
It's myself and a few people who hide behind anonymous accounts. Yeah. And they do it from their anonymous accounts because they don't want to face any retaliation.
Exactly.
And
they've been bullied. They've been bullied.
Right. Well, they can bully me. That's fine. I can turn off the screen. But right is right, and wrong is wrong.
Emily, if using your reasoning regarding not being able to relate to these folks to the degree that you don't want to have anything to do with them, if you use that reason,
I have a deep compassion for it. Because I deeply understand where these young people are in that confusion. As a 35-year-old woman, when puberty hit me, I didn't want to morph into a woman. I didn't want to, you know, go through the pain every month and still have to go to school every day, and why me, and why reason. So I can understand how a young person's mind, if presented opportunities to not do this, I can understand how, you know, I can see the big picture. I can see how it can all happen. I just, what is wrong with the adults?
Well, let me share with you some way that I deal with this. Yes, I think reality is going to sort that out in time. It really is. And we're going to look back and say, what were we doing?
Yeah.
But as a psychologist, as I get older and more into this world, I am less and less shocked by what people can believe.
Yes, sir.
I am less. And one of the rationales, if you will, that in essence helps me to understand this craziness, is if you believe that it is okay, it should be legal to kill a baby even as it is being born, then I am not shocked by any way you think about anything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I look at it. And that's not a fatalistic view. It's a realistic view.
No,
you get people, you can be convinced that it's okay. I mean, like my son said, he's very pro-life. But he said, you know, Dad, I can kind of understand why people would think in the very early stages of pregnancy, okay, it doesn't look like a human, it's just, okay. But he says, I cannot fathom how they can say, as that baby's being born, you can kill it. He said, that is beyond, you don't have to be religious to understand that. And so if you can think that, and I would bet that there is a heavy percentage of people who think that, who also believe that if a 7-year-old says I'm in the wrong body, you just have to automatically say, oh, yay, I'm glad we discovered it now, rather than to explore where that confusion is coming from. And psychologists and medical people have a duty to explore where that confusion is coming from. I know it. So, my dear, be at peace that you can, and speak up as you can. Don't worry about it.
Thank you, Dr. Frank.
Yes, honey. Yeah, that's a classic example. Here's a poor woman who's feeling like I'm bullied. You know, look, I'm looking all around me, and I'm like a minority of one. No, she's not a minority of one. If you look at the stats, 80% of, well, maybe not quite that high, but the majority believe we've got to look into this a lot further. Getting more calls from girls in one program. than I did in all my years of college. Of course, if I was in college now, girls call you. So those days are over, right? And you didn't, even when I was in school, girls didn't call guys. Guys called the girls and they could hang up on us. That's the way it was. And you had to have a very solid self-image. I mean, when I got hung up on 10, 12, 15 times, I took the hint. I really did. I took the hint. All right, before I go back to your calls, a couple things I want to comment on. Emily was serious, sadly upset, and understandably so, by what she saw in her little community. She's thinking, okay, this is a tiny little community, and in fact, why are they thinking like this? She feels alone. Is there somebody on our line? Elizabeth? No?
Hi there.
Okay. Oh, okay. Let me tell you. All right. I will suspend what I was saying because somehow Eric Dumont put you on the phone before I was ready for you. So probably what's going to happen is my biorhythms are out of sync. I am not aligned with Jupiter and Mars, and whatever perspective I'm going to give you is going to be shaky. So, that said, let me preface your call with this. I saw a recent statistic that 55% of public school teachers would like to be out of teaching. Does that surprise you?
No, not at all. I'm actually surprised the percentage isn't higher because I'm one of them. And I see it, you know, all throughout, you know, my community, my teaching community.
You asked for my perspective. I think the public schools are getting the results of a society that has pretty much abandoned many of the socializing, moralizing influences for young children. High percentage of broken families, high percentage of children born to single moms, high percentage of turning from God, high percentage of children being raised by internet. When they come to school and you see them, they are much more aggressive, much more defiant, much more argumentative, much less able to attend, focus. I agree with that. That is the natural byproduct of what is happening. How long were you out of teaching before you came back and got shell-shocked?
About 20 years. I was a stay-at-home mom. I have 7 children ranging in age from 24 down to 16, and a few of them I homeschooled. So I've had the perspective of that of a homeschooling mom and also a mom of public school children. So I've seen the decline of the public schools over, you know, all of these years, the last 2 decades, just a significant decline, especially in the last 5 years. But I, as I told your call screener, when I re-entered the classroom, I felt like Rip Van Winkle waking up in a world I no longer recognize. Just allowing kindergartners to be physically aggressive to teachers, being me being one of them. I'm a special education teacher, and I deal with a lot of behaviors, and my assistants and I are physically attacked on a regular basis. My most recent one was having to go to urgent care for a head injury, being hit in the back of the head with a book by a kindergartner, but just punching, spinning, kicking, biting, bruising, and I've never seen anything like it. And it's all, the response is usually, this is
their handicap. That's right.
Trauma,
this is their handicap.
Trauma. Mm-hmm. And if you had, I have also been told, if you had, some of this is from you not having the proper techniques. And
right. You're not skillful enough.
I was done.
Right.
So I just want to know your perspective as a professional and as a dad.
I see it.
As a mom,
I see it totally. I have teaching friends who have been in the business for a long time, and they're shell-shocked at the rapid downward spiral in classroom conduct. Now, much of this could be mitigated, by the way, which is attested to those schools that, in fact, reintroduce traditional structure limits and consequences. This, especially among the younger kids, if the schools didn't follow an awful lot of notions that are completely unworkable, and more than that, harmful, like, well, part of the problem here, Elizabeth, is you. You're getting punched because you don't know how to diffuse conflictual situations. You are not psychologically sophisticated enough. Or things like, and I got this when I worked in the schools for 15 years, consulted to about 12 school districts, and I did much, much, much with the special ed teachers. By the way, I got out of it. I left after the day that the kid punched me, and it was everything I could do to just, how shall we say, restrain him, because there's no way I was going to let that happen. And he said to me, my parents are going to sue you. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't need this. I don't need this at all. I am out of here. So, and this was 30 years ago. And it was a special ed class. And I remember when the state law came down, and this is what you're facing. These children cannot be suspended or traditionally disciplined because of their handicap. Now, is that the state law where you are? That's right.
Correct.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember thinking that. We had these SBH kids, at that time it was called severe behavior handicapped, who were aggressive. And their aggression, like you said, if they swung or hurt or did this, you had to find some way to block yourself or to not get hurt or get out of the way or distract or do something, because their quote-unquote handicap was their behavior. Therefore, we couldn't suspend because of their behavior. Talk about a catch-22.
Right.
You're right.
Yes, and I've even, the first time I saw a classroom trash, for lack of a better word, you know, and was told, oh no, step back. We just let them do that and get it out. And we're, you know, I was stunned, just chaos. So,
yes. It does come down to your administration, my dear. It truly does. It comes down to your administration.
Yeah.
If that's their attitude, then you got to seriously think, do I even want to be back in this classroom?
Right. Well, I think that it's in a number of schools now, that this kind of approach. And I thank you for sharing your perspective. Do you have any thoughts on how to respond to physical aggression from a five-year-old, or
you go to the administrators? You say, "What? You go to the administrators and say, what would you have me do? What am I allowed to do? Am I allowed to restrain with a basket weave? No, 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 no. You need your hands. Keep your hands off. What am I allowed to do? Am I allowed to discipline? Put your head down at the table. What can I do? What am I permitted to do? Stay there, Elizabeth. I want to talk more about this, because this is, how shall we say, a frontline problem because of so many nonsense ideas that have entered the schools in and been made worse by some of the unsocialized kids who are coming into the schools. Don't leave the radio too fast. If you've been listening for a little while, and a little while is anything up to a minute, your IQ is going to go up. You may not feel it, but it'll be there. It'll be noticeable in the vocabulary that you use, in the insights that you have, in the overall potency of your thinking. Now you turn that radio off, get out of the car, whatever you're doing, you're going to decompress. And sometimes I can't prove it, but we've had people say, yeah, I feel a little fuzzy-headed. Well, that's right. You're coming down. Should have some kind of decompression. You know, what you can do is you can have listen to another program on another station that can get you to ease back down. That's what you do. I'm talking to Elizabeth. She came back into the classroom after being a mom for 20 years full-time. She's a teacher, and she's working with kids in special ed, kindergarten, I don't know what kind of special ed, probably learning problems or behavior problems. And she's shell-shocked, absolutely shell-shocked at the aggression, the nastiness, the defiance, the physical assaults of these kids. And, of course, compounding her frustration is the fact that her administration says, no, we're not going to discipline these kids. You got to deal with it. They're in your classroom. And no, if they want to trash your classroom, let them trash your classroom. They got to get it all out. Catharsis, you know. This is what they're dealing with. They've got home problems, and what do you expect? This is what they do. Still there, Elizabeth?
Yes, I am still here. I do want to ask Dr. Ray on this Feast of St. Joseph, if I can ask your listeners to please pray for me that God brings another job into my world, into my life, because I know God didn't create me to be punched, kicked, slapped, and spit on by kindergartners on a regular basis, and I'm really feeling completely discouraged and demoralized by it. And so I would just appreciate all of your prayers for me, for whatever God wills of me, because he has me here for a reason, you know, but I don't really want to be here anymore in this position. So,
well, Elizabeth, he may not have you there for a reason. You may have just gone there. And part of smart living is this really where I want to be? Much of we do in our lives, we make decisions. And I think there's a little danger in thinking, well, God wants me here. Well, not necessarily. It just may be that's what you decided to do, and God's saying, well, okay, pray to me, and I'll help you decide what a better move is. So I don't think you, yeah. And I don't think you're feeling this, just in case, reading between the lines, you're feeling a little guilty because you're saying, God must want me here for something. He must want me here to help these kids, and I'm a coward, and I'm a wussy, and I'm going to pull out. And am I going against God's will? Oh, I don't think that has anything to do with it. If that's any part
Thank
of this.
You.
Oh, maybe it was part
no,
of it.
No, believe it or not, I'm not feeling like that at this point. I really feel as though, you know, I'm open to whatever God wants of me. Certainly I don't want to abandon children who already have abandonment issues, but I have to put my family first, and this is just the situation is disordered, and so it's hard to go to work every day where I see chaos, and I really can't do anything to affect positive change because this, you know, the
you
way
no
that
leverage.
Things are set up.
So, yeah, you have no leverage.
Yeah, so, I mean, when kids are allowed to punch and kick a teacher and then they're taken out of the classroom for 10 minutes and brought back because they're, quote-unquote, re-regulated, there's a big problem with that. So there's no working with that.
When I worked in the schools, I was consultant to several SBH classes. One of the SBH classes was an elementary class run by an ex-Marine, Ron Bulford. I used to call him Bulldog Bulford. Bulford was viewed sometimes as a very straightforward, not necessarily psychologically, educationally enlightened instructor. The other SBH class teachers were a little more educated along the enlightened lines that you're finding very frustrating. The interesting thing about Bulford, now these kids were all put into his class because they were extremely disruptive in other classes. You walked into Bulford's class, you could hear a pin drop. Those kids loved him. It was the best behaved class probably in the whole school. Why? Because Bulford had authority. Ron was a just straight ahead, no nonsense, didn't tolerate it, and he had leverage. And he gave these kids a gift. He took them out of classes where they were targeted as the bad boys, and they were almost all boys, into his class where they succeeded. And he wasn't necessarily following all the enlightened psychological things that sounds like your administration is doing, but he had the best class. Interesting, huh? Here's what I'd say, not surprising. Yeah. Here's what I'd say to you, Elizabeth, and I would say this to Emily, too. I am immersed where you are. I see all the signs of struggles in our society, among people, among families, all over the place. I still am at peace. I still have a very positive, contented view of life. for several reasons. One, I can't really do anything about it. The societal issues, that is. I can do what I can individually, but societally, not much. Two, I don't fall back on, well, God's in charge. God will take care of it. God's in charge. That one doesn't sit well with me, because God allows us to screw things up. And in the long run, he will be in charge, but in the short run, we can do a lot of damage. So I don't get comfort out of that one in the short term. Also, I choose to be at peace. I choose to say, I want to love life. I want to see the sunset. It's beautiful. I want to mow the lawn and smell the grass. I just want to do that stuff. And if I get immersed in looking around me and saying, what in the heck is going on here? I'm watching from the front bleacher seat of a society in a moral free fall. I don't dwell on that. I just don't. I can't. So what I would suggest to you is find out what you can do from your administration, and I think it'll be very enlightening for you. And secondly, look to go someplace else. Maybe a Catholic school, maybe a private school, maybe a charter school. Look to go someplace else that doesn't have to buy into all of the nonsense notions that basically say if the kid wants to tear up your classroom, let him tear up your classroom.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Ray. I really appreciate you.
You're welcome, honey. Thanks.
You have a great day. Thank you.
You too. This is Dr. Ray. I'll be back.
This is Dr. Ricardo Selva, director of the jazz program at Schoolcraft College in Livonia, Michigan, inviting you to a special evening of music on Monday, March 31st at 7:30 p.m. at the Vista Tech Center. The concert features creative programming and engaging ensembles that will make this experience a delightful way to usher in the freshness of spring, and the admission is free. For information, go to schoolcraft.edu/music or call 847-721-7299. We hope to see you there.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jangle.
In the fourth rule for the discernment of spirits, St. Ignatius of Loyola describes seven forms of spiritual desolation. The first form of spiritual desolation is darkness of soul. This darkness of soul is in direct contrast to the workings of the good spirit in spiritual consolation, that of inspiration. A soul experiencing darkness of soul feels they are in, as Father Timothy Gallagher describes it, an anxiety-filled darkness. Father Gallagher writes, here the person feels helplessly trapped in confusion, unable to comprehend what is occurring spiritually. Mingled with this inability to understand is the effectively heavy sense that all things are going badly and will continue to worsen. Though the experience of spiritual desolation can be difficult, the call is always to reject it. Spiritual desolation is always built on a lie.
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, abstaining from meat, dairy, sweets, wine, oil, iPhones, and entertainment, and adding more prayer seem unreasonable? It is actually the norm that Lent seeks to bring us back to.
Now on Ave Maria Radio's newest FM stations, 105.5 FM in Southfield and 107.9 FM in Ann Arbor.
Thank you for joining me here. The doctor is in. Appreciate the company, Dr. Ray Grady. Holly from Michigan. She's doing what a lot of us do, which is if I'm gonna donate stuff, if I'm gonna give, I'd like to do it where it will have the most direct impact on the people that I want to help. Hi, Holly.
Right. Hi, Doctor. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, sure, my pleasure.
I have been donating my stuff to St. Vincent de Paul because when I didn't have a job and my husband fell ill, they paid our bills for a short time. So this is what I've been doing, okay? Mm-hmm. I always wanted to know, is there a better place to donate? Like, can I donate to relatives? Can I donate to, or can I, if I have three of the same thing, can I give them to somebody else? Which one is more like better and beneficial?
So well, without a whole lot of exploration, my dear, without a whole lot of exploration, I mean, there are places you can go. For example, there are websites that will tell you of the certain high-profile charities, what percent are administrative and what percent goes directly to. What I do is I like to spread it out. For example, there's a group in Haiti that I give to that I know the gentleman. And they just go straight to the kids. The stuff just goes straight to the kids. Very little overhead. Sometimes you can give it to relatives. You can say, hey, you know what? They need this. I'm going to give it to them. You can just spread it all over the place.
Right.
Everybody has
that experience when I wanted to give to relatives. She's like, it was like a flannel gown that I made. Oh, this fabric is good. I can cut it up and clean the kitchen and the bathroom. I don't know if she meant it or not. I didn't say anything, so I've been very careful. That was hurtful, first of all. So I've been careful of, you know, donating.
Holly, wait a minute. I'm going to correct you right there.
Okay.
That wasn't hurtful. You gave it to her.
I'm sorry?
Well, it wasn't hurtful.
Yeah.
You gave it to her, and what she did with it, you decided you were going to be hurt by it. You could have said, well, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all.
Well, that's different. I wasn't expecting that's real different than that was hurtful. Because hurtful says, well, I would have thought she would have been appreciative. I would have thought she would have kind of said, gee, thank you, I can really use this. Not, well, I'm going to cut it up and use it to wipe the bathroom down.
Well, she could have said, no, I don't need it. I just like, when I donate, I make sure it doesn't go. Okay, when I donate, I know it's a good thing. It's a good product. You know, it's a good.
I haven't gotten any of your stuff, Holly. You have sent me nothing.
Well, my mom was a seamster. She raised us where this has to be ironed. This can't be ripped. This can't, you know. That kind of stuff. This is how I grew up. So when I give clothes, they have to be perfect, and they can't be worn out. It's like if I think they should go to the garbage, I'm not going to donate them. So
you're a charity dream.
You know, thought. Yeah.
I wouldn't get too caught up in where exactly am I going to get the most bang for my buck in giving to charity. You can certainly research a few of these places. You know, the ones that I give the most to are the ones I'm pretty confident that they are responsible with my money. Cross Catholic Outreach, radio stations, the Catholic radio stations, they're very good. They're very, very good. EWTN, all these folks are real good. But if you have goods...
I did not know that, but I will.
If you have goods,
I
you can do that. And there are, as I said, there are sites on the internet that actually say, okay, here's 27 common charities, and here is the percentage that they use for administrative costs. I almost never, ever, ever give money to a call solicitor that says, I'm calling for the American Red Cross, or I'm calling, because they get a high percentage of the donations, a high percentage. And the rationale is, of course, they bring in a lot more than the charity could. But if I'm going to do that, I'm just going to go straight to the charity.
Okay. Thanks. I didn't know about the research. But then again, it's not on me, right? It's not on you. Whoever you give it to, it's not on you.
No, that's exactly right. And that's why when your relative said, I'm going to use it to clean my bathroom.
Yeah,
well,
that was severe. That was extreme. So
learn a lesson. Don't give her anything anymore. I wouldn't have done that. I'd have said, Holly, do you have several more of these? I'd like these. And then I'd put them up on eBay. That's what I would do. But I wouldn't use it to clean my bathroom.
Yeah,
I'm teasing you.
I don't understand. And this was a close relative, so.
Don't be hurt by stuff like that. Don't be hurt. Just simply say, well.
Yeah, that was like, not nice at all.
Well,
so,
well, you know what you were doing?
So you were doing,
I'm a seamstress. I make good stuff. This is really high quality stuff that I'm giving her, and she doesn't even recognize that. That's what you were doing. You're kind of taking it personal.
Yeah, so that's why I'm placing.
And you can give something to me, and I won't know if it's good or not good. My wife says to me, "Ray, why can't you dress nicer?" I go, "I thought I was."
Not all people appreciate quality. Correct. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Doctor,
all right,
for taking
honey.
My call.
I'll talk to you.
Bye bye.
All right. Bye. You know, I'm open for charity. Hey, heck yeah, I'll make you feel good, and I would never make you feel bad about that. That's for sure. Well, no more time left. I got about 30 seconds. So I appreciate very much the company. You got to know what a 20-plus year enjoyment it's been here. Oh, Dr. Ray, are you saying you're leaving? Now, God willing, no. As long as I'm able, I'm not exactly laying brick, you know. Well, every once in a while, I pull a muscle reaching for my Coke because I put it too far away, and that kind of stretches something in my back. So, you know, but I don't think I can get workman's comp for that. I don't think Avi will pay me for that. Thank you for joining me. You have one walk that's eternal, and if those of us who are older, that walk is bringing you closer to eternity, that walk with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.